Okay, y'all, welcome to the Luxury Investment Podcast by Carly Carter. I am your host, Carter. It's so nice to be here with you. Thank you so much for listening or watching on my YouTube channel if you are watching there. Let's get into the very first episode of this series. We are doing two of my very most asked questions, which are, number one, what is investment shopping? You guys know I preach investment shopping all the time if you all follow me over on my Instagram at Currently Carter. And that's really where I kind of just started developing a following, is preaching investment shopping. So what is it, right? Next question is, what is a luxury asset? And we're going to go into both of those today. So let's talk a little bit about what an investment is, right? What is investment shopping? Investment shopping as a whole is spending your money on something that is going to retain its value. And it can do that in a few different ways, right? You have something that is a fixed value, meaning there's usually some sort of law associated. For example, you're in New York and you have a fixed rent, right? There's a contract that you sign that this building has a fixed rent. It cannot go up over time. Right? Which is great. That, when it has to do with goods, is very unlikely. There's nothing to come to mind that I can even think about, actually, that is a good that has a fixed rate. Because typically, when you're talking about goods, they are extremely subjugated to inflation. Inflation is when we print money and we print more money when people need more money for things. Well, if you print too much money and it no longer is in balance, or there's no longer equilibrium of what those goods cost, and the cost of living just continues to go up, now you have an inflation bubble, right? Okay, I know we're going to like college course level of what investment shopping is, but I feel like that's just a good baseline to understand what we're talking about. We'll get simpler as we go along. Okay, so investment shopping as a whole. So we call that a depreciating asset or an appreciating asset, right? Depreciating assets are things like cars. The second you drive a car off the lot, it depreciates in value by like 5% to 20%, depending on what it is, right? That means you buy that car cash, all in, you give it to the dealer, you drive off the lot, you literally make a U-turn, turn around and sell it back to the dealer, and you will lose, let's say, $5,000 to $20,000 on that car. That's a depreciating asset because they make new ones every single year. And over time, that machinery is going to break down and no longer work for you, right? So that's not a good asset. An appreciating asset is the opposite. Something that you buy now that increases in value every year, and therefore it is only going to benefit you the earlier you buy it. A great example of this would be a house, right? Housing market increases in value every single year. So the second you buy your house, and let's say you buy it all in cash, let's make it easy numbers, $20,000. In 5 more years, you're going to be able to get $25,000 out of that house all day long, easy numbers. Now, we can play this game in just our everyday shopping, and that's what I've coined investment shopping. And that has to do with luxury goods. Let's talk about Chanel. Chanel is kind of the poster child for an appreciating good, right? An appreciating asset. When you buy a Chanel bag, they increase their prices every single year. Just to give you a few examples, in 1955, a Chanel bag cost $220. Those were the good old days, were they not? And then let's jump all the way up to 1990. It cost $1,150 for a medium double flap Chanel bag, right? Which is their kind of quintessential poster child Chanel bag. All right, now let's jump to 2010. $2,850 in 2010. 2020, here's the big jump, $6,500. Now, from 2010 to 2015 alone, you had a 71% increase. Now, you have 2020, right, to 2022. They cost in stores right now $8,800. That is 2 years only, a 35% increase. In general, Chanel, on average, will increase their bags around 20% every year, if you put that all together, right? You can buy something now in store that in a year, in an estimate, is going to go up 20%, which means what? If I buy this now, right, I will always be able to get my money out of this. This asset, this $8,000, will always, from now and forever, be worth $8,000, unless it does two things, right? Unless the market completely crashes, which where there's housing bubbles, things like that can happen, or the condition of the item lowers, okay, which just with regular use is probably going to do that. Now you have what I call the sweet spot of investment shopping. That is when you buy something, you use it, you love it, right? Well, you're not even necessarily buying something to sell it. I get that comment all the time. Well, yeah, I just buy things because I love them. I'm not buying to be a reseller. I'm not buying to sell them in general. Absolutely, I agree with you. Same, same. I do that all the time. I buy bags because I know I'm going to keep them in my closet literally forever. I'm going to hand them down to my kids. I never want to get rid of them. I never want to sell them. But that's not necessarily why you buy an appreciating asset. You buy an appreciating asset because if you ever needed to, you have assets now in your closet portfolio that accumulates over your total net worth, right? When you buy multiple houses, those houses have worth and they capital gain every year. Now, capital gains means the amount that something is worth that increases every year when you just do nothing but let it sit there, right? So technically, a Chanel purse would capital gain 20% every year. This being said, you can find that sweet spot in Chanel where you're buying, let's say you buy it in store right now, let's give it in 2020, $6,500. Great. Well, you use it, you love it, so and therefore the quality or the overall use of the bag, the condition goes down. Great. Now, from 2022, it increased 35% alone. So let's say you had a situation and you now wanted to liquidate one of your assets. The condition is lower, so you can't get that $6,500 back out of it necessarily. Could you? Yes, of course you can. Because why? It went up 35%. So now when someone goes to buy that same exact Chanel bag in store, it is $8,800 plus the tax. So you're walking out alone at like, what, just over $9,000. But remember, you bought it for $6,500, but let's include the tax so it's equal numbers to equal numbers. Let's say you paid just under $6,900. And now it's worth what? Just over nine. So let's say $7,000 and $9,000 again, just for the easy math, and just so you can follow me a little easier. You paid $7,000, now it's worth $9,000. Well, it makes sense if you're buying a used bag, if you want to get a deal, somebody might be willing to pay you, let's say $7,500, maybe even $8,000. You get a good deal. You get a good buyer. They really want that specific color. They don't make that color anymore. And they love that color. And they get a good deal because the price in store right now is $9,000. So you sell it to them for $8,000. You just made $1,000 on a bag that you already used. That, my friends, is the sweet spot. Now, there is another kind of branch to this, and that's what we call vintage. Vintage has lots of different variables to it, but one of the main things being you can buy a vintage bag off someone typically much less than you would a more modern day bag for two reasons. One, it's vintage, right? So it has all that vintage patina, all the vintage looks. You can send it to the spa, get it reborn, remade, all the things. But in general, they didn't pay very much for it. So they're still making a very healthy, decent profit because of what the price is comparable today without it being really anywhere close to that price, you know? So you might be able to get, let's say, a vintage Chanel medium double flap, which is what we're referencing in these numbers here, for maybe $5,000 right now. And again, in store, they're $9,000 with the tax. So you pay $5,000 and you have a bag that looks exactly the same. Now, this is only going to apply to classic pieces, okay? And that's really what I want to get into next, which what is a luxury asset? In order for something to be a luxury asset, it really has to fit in this specific category. And that category is, it has to be something they remake long term. It has to be a classic staple piece of the brand. There is a totally different ballpark, and that is called trendy. When you're talking about trendy pieces, it's quite literally the opposite of what a classic piece is, right? Now, a trendy piece, you can still play the investment game with, but it is a very different game. That's what I call short-term investments, and classics are a long-term investment. To give you a great example, trendy pieces are the stock market, and classic pieces are the housing market. This is your bonds. This is your long-term investment. It goes up little by little by little every single year. And a trendy is you are trying to time the market in order to get the best value of your asset. Now, that is somebody that is very much more into reselling than they necessarily are investing overall. But that's not to say that great investors love wearing something a little bit more trendy in trendy pieces and want to get their money back out of it, right? Now, a trendy piece would be something that typically it stems from, let's say, Paris Fashion Week or the fashion weeks all over the world, and you have overwhelming every season, a specific thing that stems from the runway where it's either a color or it's, you know, a specific style of something, right? Let's go back to a couple years ago when it was the ugly dad shoe, the really oversized dad shoe. The Balenciaga Triple S's were kind of first on market. Then you had, the clutches, the really big oversized clutches from Bottega. And Bottega really made their reappearance on that. Right now, as I'm recording this, you have Valentino with the hot pink and the platform shoes, right? Those are all trendy things that come back in style, but then they go back out of style. And that's the key in order for it to be considered a trend, is that it has to come in and out of style again. Arguably, a Chanel classic double flap is not going to go out of style. It is a classic piece. It is timeless. It doesn't have an up curve and a bell curve back and forth in depending on the season or depending on the generation that it is now in currently, right? So when you're talking about a trendy piece, you can absolutely still use that and time the market. But what that means is you have to buy early. And in order to get these things early is in order for fashion houses to sell the concept of something being trendy, they have to implement scarcity. Scarcity is when they only make so many or they only sell so many. Half the time, it's really not even an actual scarcity where they're not making so many. It's just that they're not selling so many. They only sell so many usually to clients that already have a buying history. They already have a relationship with their SA, which is a sales associate. So they already have a buying history with them. They already have a relationship with the brand. And they say, hey, this is a new, fun, trendy piece. I want to buy it. And that is how an influencer is born in general, right? So you get in early and now everybody wants it, but they can't get it. They can't get it because they're only selling so many. So there you have the resell market. Now you can wear it, be the it girl for a little while, but you have to sell before the trend is over or else you have a dud. You have something that now you cannot get the same money that you spent out of it at all. You might not even get half out of it because the trend is on its way out. Your pool of buyers diminishes exponentially because they've either already bought it from somebody else or they realize the trend is already over and they're on to the next, as anybody is. So that would be short-term investing. You're trying to time the market. You try to buy really early, sell before the trend is over, and maybe you make either your exact money back out of it, but at least you got to wear it and get the morale or the social status that that item allotted you, right? Within your peers, within your office work, whatever, networking, all the things that brands typically do. Now, two things to do this, right? If you sell early enough, you can make a profit because there's scarcity, right? So the Bottega clutch costs $2,500. You're selling it for $3,500 because they're not anywhere. You can't find them. And it's at the peak of the arc. And now you can sell it for top dollar because everybody wants it and nobody can find it. That's when you're going to make your biggest amount of money. But arguably, you're not going to get the social status that goes along with it if you no longer have the item to wear. So you can either take a whole bunch of pictures, post them all to social media, or you're okay with the fact that you were first on target, everybody saw you in it already, and now you want to sell at the peak. If you want to sell it towards the down curve, you're going to start losing money on that asset. Now, it's not a total loss, right? Because you could very much buy something from, let's say, Zara, right? Zara has great basics, it's good quality, but is it worth something after you buy it in 5 years? Arguably not. Arguably, it's going to end up in a garage sale for a couple dollars. That is a, you know, for lack of a better term, total loss. You're not going to recoup any of the monies back on that item. So even if you're playing the trendy game, you're still always going to have some sort of value in that item, even if it's not exactly what you paid for it. Maybe the Balenciaga Triple S sneakers were $900, and now you might be able to get four out of them. You're going to lose half, but you still gain something by being able to wear them and all the reasons that you want to wear them, right? So you're kind of weighing your pros and cons in the trendy space. That is short-term investing. And what I was talking about earlier, let's get back into it, long-term investing. Long-term investing is when you only buy classics. That's what I am. That is the pool or category that I fit into. Every once in a while, I'll buy a trendy piece, usually only if I find a good deal on it and it's still within the uptick in the trend. That's because I kind of play the game of if I can find a good deal, I'm not losing that much after the trend is already over. And usually, you know, I'm willing to lose a little bit, but in general, I really stick to classics because I love when my money appreciates without me doing anything, especially when it's in my closet and I can just add to my closet portfolio where all of my bags and shoes are appreciating over time, which is awesome. So that brings up a great point though, bags versus shoes. What is a good luxury asset? What does that mean? What am I buying? Do I buy just anything from the brand that's supposed to be classic? No, let me talk to you about the difference. Now, ideally, this is something that isn't going to have the biggest impact on depreciation because of wear. Shoes wouldn't be in that category, right? Because they're on the streets, you're wearing them, they're scuffing, they're all over the place, right? Now, shoes will increase over time, every time for sure. So you're always going to be able to get some of your money back out of them, especially with a classic pair that they continue to make over time. But are you going to be able to get all of your money back out of it? Maybe if you wait long enough. If I buy a Chanel, the classic ballet flap, right, went for $600. Now they're $950. I paid $600. I've worn them. But now you might be able to get $600 out of them because brand new in store, they're $900. You know, and that's a $400 discount. And I wouldn't mind paying, let's say, you know, if me or somebody else wouldn't mind maybe paying only $600 for a used pair if they just want that color and they're not going to wear them that often. And it's no big deal if they're already worn since they're planning on wearing them. You know, so there is a bit of a game here that you can play. And that's when you follow somebody like me who loves investments. And I'll tell you what all those investments are, right? But bags in general are going to be your best luxury assets because bags don't have that much depreciation as far as wear goes, especially if you're looking to take care of your things. So overall, any bag that is a classic bag that they've made for many years is going to be a great luxury asset to purchase. Another great example of this would be Hermès. Hermès and Chanel are really the top two tiers when you're talking about investment luxury brands. That is because they both implement scarcity. Hermès much more than Chanel. Chanel is doing that a lot more this year, the last couple years, where they're starting to implement different rules where you're not allowed to buy however many double flaps so many a year. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays out for the brand since that's not something that they started with. Hermès, on the other hand, started with that ideal and that concept. And this is going to go into what I'm going to talk about in episode 2, which is how to score a Birkin. The T on Hermes, what is it? Why is it? And everything that has to do with trying to score your first Hermes bag. So definitely stay tuned for that episode. That's going to be a good one. But Hermes started with scarcity, meaning you cannot go into Hermes and buy a Birkin. You cannot go into Hermes and buy any bag, actually. You have to get offered it. And there's lots of different, you know, opinions on the morale of this, the game playing that this causes, right? But it does do its job, which is to perpetuate scarcity overall. When something is hard to get, it is more desirable to human psychology all over. Now, when you're talking about Birkins and Kellys, which are really the pinnacle of the Hermes, you know, triangle, right? Maybe Constance is under that, Picatin maybe under that. And all these bags are really only well known in certain circles of people that follow Hermes and follow the certain social status of what it is to buy a very expensive bag. Most of the time, this sort of social status actually comes from purely the ability to afford a bag and get offered a bag. It is almost kind of like deemed as you've played the game, you're somehow, you know, worthy of getting a Birkin, and therefore we have something to relate in each other, right? If I see you across the room, that's very much what the status has been for a long time, right? It's a marketing tool. It's a status symbol. It's a networking tool that will get you an automatic in with other people that have like minds or like social statuses, et cetera, right? That's really what Hermes was capitalizing on since the beginning. And again, I won't get into too much of like how to get offered a bag and like what the whole game is, et cetera, because we'll wait for that for the next episode. A perfect example of what a luxury asset is, because there is scarcity, you can go in, get offered a Birkin, buy it, walk out, triple your money instantly. arguably easily triple it, depending on the color and the size, et cetera, right? And how valuable it is deemed, you know, within that community. So you have a really good opportunity here to make money with just shopping. And if you shop smart and use your shopping habits as investment tools, then really over time, you're developing a really awesome portfolio in your closet that is, you know, better on returns than even the housing market is. And there's so much less faff with investing in bags than there is the housing market, right? You don't have to deal with your credit. You don't have to deal with fees and banks and all the other things that typical investing is, right? Or stocks and bonds. You're paying somebody in order to watch the stocks for you and tell you what is a good investment and what's not and however many years. And then you're talking about taxes on top of that, trying to get your investment back out of it in so many years. And okay, open a Roth IRA versus, you know, a 401k and all the different elements that investing brings to the table if you're wanting to get into it. Whereas luxury investing, it just appreciates every year. And all you have to do is sell it in order to get a large chunk of your money back out of it, right? And even better if you already have a platform in which people follow you, like social media, because then it's that much easier to sell off a bag, especially if they've been watching you have it for a while, right? Even friends and family, you don't even have to be necessarily an influencer or a big blogger, but it's very easy to sell, do a little closet sale on social media now. Now, if you don't have that or you're not wanting to sell to friends and family and you're wanting to do it really discreetly, there are so many avenues in which to do that that are relatively hands-off. So again, whereas you're paying someone very large amounts of money in order to sell your house or to liquidate an asset that is, you know, housing or stocks or whatever that might be, and the fees can be pretty extensive and taxes can be even more extensive than that, you can just as easily go to someone that has a brick and mortar business like a consignment store, hand them the bag, and they hand you a buyout check or they wait until it sells. Now, that's the most expensive way to do it, a brick and mortar, meaning somebody that has a lot of overhead. Overhead is like it costs them a lot of money to do business. They have to pay rent. They have to pay employees. They have to pay all the things that makes that business run. If you get an online business, it's almost always going to be less expensive for their fees because they just have way less overhead. So they are able to undercut the market really easily because they don't have all that overhead in order to pay. So they can maybe offer you 20% instead of 50%, and they'll offer you an 80% buyout. They're done and you don't have to do anything else after that. Or maybe it's a 15% if you wait till it sells in their store and they get a 15% commission for doing the legwork and you get a 85% walk away pocket money, and you're still walking away with a profit because, again, like the example in the beginning of the show, that $7,000 to $9,000 difference of what you paid in only 2 years, that 15%, you're still walking away with all of your initial investment plus a little bit of pocket cash, which is great. The longer you wait on a classic investment like that, the more pocket cash you're going to have, even if you use a consignment shop. That, in a nutshell, is what investment shopping is. That is what a luxury asset is and why I choose to shop only with things that will appreciate over time. That's not to say I don't buy some things that are just neutral, right? Like I might buy clothes, for example, from Zara because I really like the fit, but overall, overarching, the percentage of what I'm shopping on or spending my money on is always going to be something, if I can, that is going to appreciate over time. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you guys have any questions, please comment them down below or come comment on one of my pictures on Instagram or YouTube. I'd love to answer your questions and we can get another conversation started. Maybe we will do a part two to this episode specifically just with answering your questions. And be sure to check out episode 2 with all the tea that has to do with how to get offered an Hermes bag. Thank you so much again. Please be sure to like this video on YouTube if you're watching there or rate this podcast. I'm so excited to get started up and do a new podcast every single week, maybe even up to twice a week. Maybe we'll get some interviews in there, but definitely subscribe because I'd love to have you back. Bye for now.